Welcome to Scotch and a Sandwich. This is episode 2. My name is Peter Carlson. I'm joined today by Brandon Lorenz, Joe Howard, and Tyler Bartelt.
Hello.
What's up?
And before we get started, let's clean.
What are we drinking today?
It's a Belvedere Caribbean Cask.
Caribbean Cask.
It's the last couple years of the aging. It's aged in rum barrels.
Tasty.
Now you're aging a fine scotch.
All right, so for episode 2, I'm going to give Peter a little break and moderate a little bit. So we'll just try to do 3 topics: music, sports, and something nerdy, pop culture. We're going to start with music today. And my question, the discussion I wanted to have was, which musician's death had the largest impact on you? And why? So we're going to start with Peter on this one. And the reason I came up with this was just recently Greg Allman passed away. And I think for, you know, a lot of musician fans, he was a big part of either their childhood or, you know, even just growing up and listening to some old classic rock tunes. So just thinking, you know, in the past, you know, what musician's death had a big impact on you?
Yeah. Well, we've actually had a lot recently. We've had Chris Cornell, even Bowie and Prince. I mean, we've lost a lot of greats, but I would say the one that impacted me the most, the one I remember the most, was actually Kurt Cobain's death. Mm-hmm. Because at the time, I was a young teenager, I was still trying to figure out what my lot in life was, what direction I was coming into myself, mm-hmm. and I was really getting into a lot of the punk alternative type of music, and at the time I really, really enjoyed Nirvana. So the fact that, you know, not only did he die at such a young age, but he took his life just because he didn't like the stardom of it. That kind of not that I went into some weird dark hole or anything like that, but I mean, it really had effect on me at a time when I was being molded into who I am today.
Yeah. Brandon, you got it?
I was gonna say Cobain for the same reasons that Pete said, because of my age when it mm-hmm. happened. And Nirvana was really at the apex of their popularity. That was was that 95 or 4?
No, it was 90.
Kurt Cobain died in
94. 94,
yeah.
So, I mean, grunge.
Joe.
grunge was still at the height of its dominance on the charts.
It was all flannel and.
Yeah. So.
And Seattle.
And Seattle.
Yeah, I was in middle school.
Coffee and, yeah.
Middle school, so you're at that awkward age,
right?
But middle school is a very defining time for musical tastes, and you're kind of what music you like at that age is important, because
it
kind of defines who you are and who you hang out with. And I was always more of a Pearl Jam fan, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, sure.
Now, as I've gotten older, I feel
Eddie Vedder's death must have been.
don't toy with me, Pete. Back then, because you're young and you kind of think about the world differently, there was this vibe that you were either a Pearl Jam person or a Nirvana person.
Right.
And I always considered myself more of a. Now that I'm older, they're both incredible. Mm-hmm. And it just was two different things. Pearl Jam's more of a classic rock band, Nirvana, right. More of a punk pop thing. But yeah, it was Cobain. I made a list of just a few who died young. Speaking of Greg just passing, did you know Dwayne was 24 when he got in the motorcycle?
Really?
No, I didn't know.
I didn't realize he was that young.
24. Jeez. Think about how much incredible music they made.
That was yet to be made.
John Bonham died at 32. Mm-hmm. Imagine how many more Zeppelin records there could have been.
Right.
Lennon at 40, of course. Otis Redding was 26.
Really? I didn't realize he was that.
He has one of my favorite voices. Sam Cooke was 33.
Isn't 27 supposed to be the
28?
27. 27 was
Hendrix. Joplin, Hendrix.
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
Jim Morrison.
Why that year?
Yeah, just for me personally, I'd say Cobain, because it was at a time when music was just starting to become really important to me, and they were so popular,
mm-hmm.
right?
That it caught everybody completely off guard.
Yeah, Joe, what you got?
I'm gonna go a different direction, sort of.
I'm going to echo your sentiment, but for me, I'm going to say on the same lines that you guys, it was Tupac. Mm. Tupac died in September of 96, so I was 15 years old. And that was, I mean, he was larger than life, you know, for me. And he was the first hip-hop artist that I felt truly that I was a fan. I mean, because he was in movies, he was, you know, I mean, he just is amazing. There were songs I like and artists I like, but I mean, I was a real fan of Tupac, you know. And that one hit me hard. So I'm going to say that. Plus, the All Eyes on Me movie is out, and I want to check that out real soon, too. Right. So, you know, it's kind of timely to the subject. But my two, and it's a two-way tie, 100%, absolutely two-way tie, is Michael Jackson and Prince. Michael Jackson and Prince are the two biggest musicians for me of my childhood and pretty much my entire life. That right. It hasn't really changed. Growing up, being a kid, a little one in the 80s, by the time you got to the mid 80s, Michael Jackson and Prince were pretty much mm-hmm. like the two biggest stars on the right. planet, especially Michael at that point.
So I was a surprise you didn't say either of them first.
Yeah, I said Tupac could kind of go with the
sure,
Cobain
yeah.
thing, but those two are absolutely the biggest thing
gotcha.
that happened to me. Now, the difference is, the reason why I wanted to start with Tupac, because I was relating to
sure.
you guys, the reason why I wanted to talk about these two, because I was a grown-ass man when,
right.
you know, both of these
yeah.
guys died. But they both died unexpectedly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, I will never forget exactly where I was when I heard Michael Jackson die. I will never forget the first person I talked to, which was my mother. I was in the car driving home listening to Chicago sports radio, and that was interrupted.
Wow.
To say that Michael died. And kinda then
like
I went straight
Lennon
for
was announced
him, you know,
on
yeah.
Monday Night Football. I mean, they're...
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're
Howard.
Like these,
Howard
yeah,
Michael
these
Jackson Jackson's the greatest pop star that ever lived.
So it was a big deal. So I sped straight home, man, turned on the news, and, like, just sat there in front of the television for hours.
How old was he? Was he 50? Like, early 50s?
Yeah, I think he was 50.
I think he was 50 because it
was 50. I think he
yeah.
was right before.
He
right
was,
after his 50th birthday or right before his
yeah,
because
he was doing the This Is It tour.
Yeah.
He made the movie about it. And
right,
I think
yeah.
they talked about him being 50 years old.
Also,
yeah.
Tupac is dead. Right?
That's what they say, man.
He's just hanging out with Elvis somewhere.
Somewhere.
Those two are big, man. Those were big deals for me. Those were artists that were larger than life
mm-hmm.
for me personally, and I think to overall to people, you know, if you look at the impact that they had, everybody knows Prince is, everybody knows Michael Jackson
right.
is, you know,
mm-hmm.
And you can recognize their voices or their songs
oh, yeah.
or whatever, you know, it's not as not that anybody's death is, but I think these two people reached a lot of people.
Yeah.
And dude, I had, by the time we got to the end of that week after Michael died, I had a shrine built in my dining room. I seriously, there was magazines and all the records and CDs that I had and newspapers and everything just sitting on my dining room table. And I didn't move it for like 6 months.
Was this before Rick
Straight
started
up.
Gifting you stuff?
This was before
yeah.
this was before I started getting gifts. I had already built a pretty decent collection of stuff.
Nice.
But yeah, that was big, and then Prince just caught me off guard, man. And
yeah.
and I thank God that I had a chance to see him. I never saw
yeah.
him. I never saw Michael.
Sure.
I was willing to spend. I would have sold a kidney to see him on the This Is It tour.
Mm-hmm.
But
Chrissy,
you know,
tickets.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I didn't get a chance, but I did get a chance to see Prince. Floor seats at the United Center, you know.
Do you remember
a few
who played
years
with
back.
Him?
Who played with Prince?
Yeah. Or was
that
it
night.
Just Prince?
It was Prince. And
okay.
I don't think he wore his special guests in. Because usually he has some special
yeah.
guests that come out and do things. I don't recall.
What got Michael? Was it heart failure? Or what was the coroner's report on?
Wasn't it the doctor's there's some controversy like that. But yeah, he was. Mike was taking a lot of pills. And I think.
He was overprescribed.
Yeah, I think. But I think it was overprescribed. I think Michael asked for something. Right? Yeah, Michael asked for something.
You're not
Michael
say
was paying
no.
a whole lot of money. And I don't think you were going to say no. Either way, you know.
And Prince was the same. Didn't
similar,
they say toxicology?
Yeah, it's similar. There was something going on with him, too. Then he had a reaction. I think it was a little less of an overdose in Prince's case.
But. And it's always sad when you hear, you know, even like Chris Cornell recently, like when you hear of that musician taking their life, and just it's kind of sad that we get to that point because you have this perception of him as a, you know, a fan, and then you hear something happen. You're like, oh my gosh, what's going on?
Then how are people like Keith Richards still alive?
That's
Keith Richards
he's
is 176 years old.
He's a god.
Yeah, and what happens is
he actually preserved his liver.
Yeah.
It's actually like a science experiment.
Just all the hard drugs, but no alcohol.
It's great biology or taking it.
What happens is Keith Richards is a White Walker. And it's all right. He's from beyond the wall. And when you live north of the wall, and things are different there. So
he's gonna, him and Cher are going to out-survive everybody.
Yeah, she's just, another one.
Yeah, well, she just, the way she looks still, just hasn't really aged. Like, how do you...
Well, is Cher that old?
Cher's got to be 70.
She's got to be 70.
But everybody's 70. Like,
but do they,
everybody
But do they look
70,
like Cher? No. I mean, she just did the American Music Awards, and she... rocked out in the same turn back time or that's what it was. She was in the same outfit as if we could turn back time. Then she was on the battleship, you know,
in
the music video. She wore that same outfit.
Man.
I don't want to see myself in an outfit like that when I'm 70.
I want to see you in that outfit.
Why did you want to see yourself?
I'm just saying. I couldn't pull that off.
You changing things as you get older?
So who's yours?
Yeah, you haven't said yours.
I honestly, and part of the reason I wanted to mediate this is I didn't really have one. I mean, beyond like Michael, which because I was a big Michael fan when I was a kid, Prince, because it was unexpected. I think I was too young for Cobain when that happened, because, you know, that just, it. I think maturity-wise, I wasn't old enough to like feel the impact. Mm-hmm. But Chris Cornell's rung with me just because I just always thought he had such an amazing voice as a musician and a very underappreciated. And one of the articles I read when he passed was, for our generation, he was the, I'm going to blank on his name now, Robert Plant of our generation in terms of like rock and roll. Like that type of voice who had a range doing from grunge to, you know, Audio Slave to being a James Bond theme.
Right.
Like if you, and I recently downloaded an acoustic live album of him, and just what he can do himself, if you haven't, take the time and listen to it, because he had a great voice, and I mean, he could sing some stuff. Even when him and Vedder, Temple the Dog, some of those like higher harmonies that he's doing with Vedder, like, he had a range, man, and he could sing beyond just doing, you know, kind of a grunge theme.
And such a distinctive voice, too.
Yeah.
Like, anytime, any project he was on, you could automatically tell it was him.
I, purely by chance, on a business trip in Los Angeles, happened to sit next to someone, and the stars aligned where they're like, well, we've got an extra ticket to the Temple of the Dog concert at the Forum tonight. Do you want it? $20? Yes, I do. Vedder wasn't there, but it was the original lineup. And Eddie was really not part of that band. He was just brought in for Hunger Strike.
Because
Pearl Jam was kind of forming around that time. But still sounded great, Cornell. Still sounded...
That's awesome.
I mean, that was a great show. The Forum, because they got all those championship banners hanging up in the rafters. It sounds really good, because that helps with the acoustics.
The acoustic treatment.
Funny, I mean, just... quick tie-in, like, my favorite Prince tribute after he passed away was Chris Cornell doing Nothing Compares to You.
Oh, sure.
Out of everything that was done, that was the one that kind of hit me hard. He does a lot of good covers.
If you look up some of the live, especially live shows when he's playing acoustically, he does a lot. He does a great cover of Imagine.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, and the room is just, you can hear a pin drop when he's doing it, because everybody's just so enamored by his great voice, but... yeah, it's always sad when something like that happens. But so on to round two, we're going to sports, and we're gonna start with Brandon on this one. And you know, we could easily talk about NBA Finals. You know, Penguins just won Stanley Cup back to back. Crosby won MVP again.
That goal was bananas. Yeah,
we could just go on to that. You know, Game Five is tonight. Warriors are up 3-1.
But they were up 3-1 last year.
I know it's
should be 2-2.
I'm gonna preempt this. If LeBron is able to come back and help his team and basically will his team to victory. I mean, Kyrie's been playing off. Last game was just amazing. Even the last two, you know, he added some late game missed shots, but Kyrie's been playing just phenomenally. But say Cavs can come back and kind of repeat a similar thing as last year, we're going to then have another discussion on where LeBron's legacy lands, because you know, we kind of had this last week or 2 weeks ago, but we'll come back to that. But sports, thought this might be an interesting discussion is, what is the greatest sports duo in history? You know, all sports, whatever combination you want, but what is the greatest duo in sports history? So, Brandon, you're going to lead us off on this guy.
There's a lot of good ones.
There are. It's hard to narrow down.
The one I picked because I thought it might not be thought of by a lot of people. And so when I throw out some of the statistics, I think it'll be eye-opening, because I think this is a duo that not a lot of people automatically think of when you have this conversation.
All right.
You think of, and deservedly so, you think of Jordan and Pippen. You think of maybe like Gretzky and Messier.
Yep.
A lot of people think of Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig.
You're just going, what if everybody just...
Sorry, I picked the player.
We picked everyone's
next question. The ones...
Thanks.
The one I went with is Henry Aaron and Eddie Matthews from the Milwaukee Braves. So, dig this. So, I think Eddie Matthews' career started with the Braves in 1953. And then Hank Aaron broke in with the Braves in 1954. Originally a shortstop who was slated to play in the minors, but the Braves' starting shortstop broke his ankle sliding into second base. So Aaron was brought up to play short, but he was so good that the Braves management decided to make him an outfielder. Ironically, Aaron broke his ankle late in the 54 season, but he had already established himself by that point. So, numbers. They played 13 seasons as teammates. Most of them in Milwaukee, and then a few
and then Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Okay.
863 home runs between the two of them.
That's a lot of home runs.
As teammates.
And how many, Hank has how many of that?
744.
Well, but no.
That's not all for a day.
Yeah.
Right.
Because,
right.
No, here's the kicker. Eddie Matthews was out of baseball by the time he was 37.
Oh, okay.
That dude liked to party. Hank Aaron played until he was like 44.
Okay.
So a lot of Hank's home runs happened after Eddie Matthews was no longer a
teammate. So then combined, that's pretty good for 800-something.
13 seasons, 863 home runs together.
That's a lot of home runs.
Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig hit 859 together. Matthews and Aaron have more than Babe and Lou Gehrig. Neither of them ever had a 50 home run season. Wow. They were just steady. Hits, 4,332 hits as teammates. Ruth and Gehrig, 3,980. Ooh. So that's almost 400 hits more.
Can I ask how many years Ruth and Gehrig played together?
12. So,
dang. Wow.
Matthews and Aaron. Matthews and Aaron had the benefit of one season more. So on that home run record,
still that's maybe 80 home runs. Yeah. No, a super stud season. Yeah. That's 80 home runs.
Yeah,
you know, like
in a steroid season.
Steroid season that was 150 home runs.
I just thought, now and Matthews, like I said, he was out of baseball at 37, and had hit 512 home runs.
Imagine if he would have.
You want to talk about power in the middle of the lineup? Oh, and championships, because you got to consider that. 1957 World Champions, 1958 won the NL pennant, lost to the Yankees in the World Series. Beat the Yankees in 7 games in 57, lost to the Yankees in the World Series in 58. Were tied for the pennant with the Dodgers in 59, ended up losing to the Dodgers in a playoff. But they were, from 57 to 59, every year, were either NL champions or tied for the pennant. You know? Okay. So
in terms of, like, Ruth and Gehrig, I'm sure they have more world champions.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Yeah,
undoubtedly.
Between the two. But statistically, it's hard to argue, you know, put up stats.
Aaron and Matthews, plus when you look, if you Google best sports duos, they're not usually on a lot of those lists.
Well, but, yeah, Matthews isn't really a name that's thrown out.
It's
and it's probably because he was overshadowed by Hank Aaron and the greatness that he continued to be. Imagine if he would have continued to play.
I love it. Oh, yeah.
What would have happened? But, wow, that's a good, good pick, man. Joe, what do you got?
You know, I did a lot of research on this, and I really wanted to dig into perhaps what the future holds. So I'm going to go with Aaron Rodgers and Ty Montgomery.
No,
I'm going to make
it. Ty's going to have a few good years there.
Jeez. And Rodgers is playing until he's 55.
Oh, yeah. No.
He might.
I'm
convinced there's, like, special medicine and diet that they got, like, Brady and Rodgers on that allows them to play until...
Rodgers
like,
doesn't eat cheese.
Whatever
no milk.
I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with Jordan Pippen. Just to make it easy. And also because it's...
It's true.
It is what I grew up watching. Okay, again. So, I watched both of their pretty much entire careers in Chicago, entire careers, period. And that from about 80, let's say 88 through, you know, 98, that 10-year period, they were ferocious, you know.
Yeah.
And they established those two specifically, and the Bulls established the changing of the guard from the Celtics and the Lakers and let's say Detroit. Mm-hmm. Detroit was running roughshod over folks. And they took that to Chicago, and then they said, we're going to do it for the next decade.
Yeah,
and, you know, come catch us for the next decade.
Six out of
and
10
honestly,
years.
And honestly, I'll tell you, it would have been, I don't think anybody would have beat him if Jordan had a left.
No.
Jordan had a left, they would play.
They would have won 7 straight.
Yeah.
That's a good. That could easily be argued for. Because what team won it in that?
Houston. Olajuwon was Houston,
which one of the teams that was usually in the finals or deep in the playoffs against Jordan.
Houston was kind of up and coming.
Was that
a Bill Cartwright era or a Luke Longley era Bulls team that would have had to go up against
early?
Olajuwon?
Oh, it was the 94-95 Houston Rockets that was the year Mike was gone. I believe that was
they
the year
Barkley?
That they beat. What's that?
They
won 2 championships.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Oh.
Rudy Tomjanovich, never underestimate the heart of a champion.
Yeah, because that year that Jordan came back, the Bulls didn't make it. Yeah.
Against the Orlando Magic. Orlando Magic went on to play Houston Rockets, and they got beat.
Is that one of Shaq's?
Actually, Shaq's
first year.
Yeah. Great. That was what it was like. Shaq's second or third year.
Okay.
They had a great final.
Was Shaq Fu out yet?
It was
the Sega Genesis game.
Dude, Shaq versus Hakeem it was an amazing final. Just watching those two, and look at the numbers. It was absolutely amazing. But I'll say, all right, I'm gonna go with Jordan and Pippen. But I have to get, like, I wish we had to open this up to say, like, what's the most disappointing duo of all time?
You can add it right now.
Because I was really big on, and I'm glad we brought it up, Penny Hardaway and Shaquille O'Neal. Like, I thought that was gonna be a thing.
Could've been if they stayed together.
If they had stayed together and Shaq, I mean, you know, you see there's a 30 for 30 out on that Orlando Magic team.
I'm thoughtful.
Which is really, really cool. Awesome. But Shaq kind of, you know, money and some things and, you know, losing in the finals and
yeah.
he went off. And that was, yeah, he went Hollywood, and he did his thing. Take nothing away from him. But Shaq and Penny, I thought that was going to be Magic and Kareem. I thought that was going to solidify, sure, like, everything. Plus, I was looking for something to hold on to, because Jordan left me. But, you know, they did a movie together. They did, I mean, that was some. It was something different.
Yeah.
You know, they were really young, but super dominant, you know, and it was something different. It was a 6'7" point guard.
Yeah.
And the hugely dominant center. It was just something.
Yeah, nobody had dominated like Shaq did it. No, when he came into the league.
When Jordan came back in, was it 95?
After beating the
Monstars. Wasn't it mid-season?
It was.
Yeah, he came back like 45. Jordan came back like the last, I believe, 19 or 20 some odd games.
It's funny the things you remember in life, right? Like vividly. For whatever reason, I think, remember the band Live? And the album Throwing Copper.
Yeah.
It was huge. I remember being so excited because that it was like an NBA and NBC. It was like Jordan's return. You know, like he'd been practicing. He was ready to go. He was playing that night or afternoon. And I remember to get myself psyched up for it, I listened to Live Throwing Copper in my room.
That's like slow alternative.
I know.
Oh, man. No, they had some stuff on that album. He came back against the Pacers. I think he went like 5 of 19 from the field.
15, 17 like points, yeah. 19 points.
He was tired from his Monstars game, man. Hey, we saw Space Jam. He saved the world, and then he came back to the Bulls. I mean,
it took about like 5 games for him to walk into Madison Square Garden, and he dropped like 55 on the Knicks. Like, I think it was like his 5th or 6th game. He ended up playing the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. Spike Lee on the sideline, and he dropped 55 on the Knicks. Mike was amazing, but yeah, I'm gonna go with Mike and Scotty. All
right, Peter, who you got?
Well, I thought actually about Jordan and Pippen.
Kind of the it's first probably thing that yeah. That's comes to
when you first
mind.
Posed
yeah.
the question. That's actually what I first thought about. But I'm going to go a different route because one, I was pretty sure Joe was going to pick it. Secondly, at the time, I was more into a different sport and I was more into football.
Okay.
So instead of going the Pippen Jordan route, I'm going with Montana and Rice.
All right, what are your reasons why? Because I wonder if there's a rebuttal coming from...
Sure.
No, I'm absolutely laughing because of how nasty
it was,
that combination
disgusting.
Was. All
right. It was all like... Because, right. Okay, so 2 Super Bowl victories.
Yeah.
They had... Now, there's other duos that have had 2 Super Bowl victories, but they have a total of... Was it... where was it? Okay. 5 NFC West titles, 2 Super Bowls. Jerry Rice accumulated 6 1,000-yard receiving seasons. Even during the Super Bowl victories, the pair connected on 18 receptions and 363 yards for 4 touchdowns. Okay, and there was actually only 4 seasons in which the two played at least 9 games together. So over a very short period of time, they accomplished a lot.
Yeah,
that's
I can't knock that.
I think they benefited a little bit from the West Coast offense that San Francisco ran, but you're talking about two of the best ever at their respective positions as teammates. Yeah, it's a good pick, man. I mean, Rice, best route runner.
Best receiver.
Oh, yeah, best receiver, hands
down. You know, not the fastest guy, not the biggest hands, you know, if like all the measurables that you look at, you'd see on paper.
You're
and,
like,
and say,
Ty
like,
Montgomery is so much further along on these measurables than Jerry Rice. And I'd see that. I see where you're going.
But
see where
I'm going with this. But, but no, like, when you put the pads on, lace the cleats up, and go out on Sunday, and actually comes time to play football on a football field, the measurables can go completely out the window, in my opinion. You know, it's some guys just know how to ball.
Those two,
like time on
play.
Now, growing up in Buffalo, obviously the Bills were good around that same time period.
Thurman and Kelly.
Mm-hmm, almost every single year, everyone's prediction at the beginning of the year was 49ers and Bills. for a
that
period
was the
of
case
like,
for a little bit.
Well, they never played each other in the Super Bowl.
Oh, nope. I thought they did.
Nope, they did not.
Who'd the Bills lose to?
Cowboys twice, Washington, Giants. And then Giants. Actually, Giants was the first one.
It.
Yeah. That first one was the worst because it came down to that Scott Norwood field goal that he shanked it by like 2 feet to the right.
That's a good pick.
That was a Ray Finkel
moment.
A great
pick.
It was. It totally was.
Looking for
that's
a Ray Finkel.
Good pick. Laces out.
But when I couldn't watch the Bills in the Super Bowl, I could watch the 49ers in the Super Bowl. And man, were they just a dynamic duo.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
So,
who you got, T?
I got a little bit of outside the box, and you know we were talking about you know how many Super Bowls those pair. So I went football, but my
go with Jordy and time.
Jordy
and time.
Jordy,
that's better.
So that's better. This is hard because I'm not always a fan of the team or what they've done, but it's hard to argue. And of course you know Jordan and Pippen, just being a Bulls fan growing up, they. Or, you know, up there, and you could argue like Aikman and Smith, you know, in terms of football.
Did I mention I had an Orlando Magic starter jacket?
That's sweet. Awesome.
Nice.
Those are the best. So not players, but I'm doing the best.
Wait, did you have the white one?
No.
The black
one? The black, blue, and white.
Okay. So there was two of them. Yeah. There was actually three of them. There was a white one, there was a blue one, and there was a black one.
I had the black one.
Okay, cool.
Did you have Reebok pumps to go with it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, then it's incomplete outfit.
I'm sorry. Do you have a starter jacket?
Packers
starter jacket?
I had Bulls.
Bulls?
Yeah. With the awesome front pocket.
Notre Dame Fighting Irish was my first one, and then I think my black Chicago one was my second.
Oh, sure.
I never had Bulls. Pumps, though. I wanted them bad, but like I knew enough. Like, my mom shut that down right away. Like, we are not spending $100 on a pair of shoes. I grew up in Cudahy, Wisconsin.
Instead,
$100 will get you four pairs of shoes.
Here, instead, take these Zumbas.
Yeah, yeah.
These awesome pants.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's fine, man. Okay, so my sports duo is actually Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
See, I was gonna go with Tim Duncan and my man Popovich, but
yeah,
I like that.
So
it's hard to argue with that.
Seven Super Bowl appearances. They've won five. You know. If you think in terms of dominance, I mean, you could argue some players and coaches, but in terms of the NFL, it's not easy until at least the 2000s. It wasn't easy for teams to put up that many successful, like, strings. Like, at least for, I mean, we're almost coming to two decades now that Brady and Belichick have just dominated the AFC. And we've seen those graphs where it's what teams have been in the AFC Championship or the Super Bowl. And it's been the Patriots, Steelers. There's like maybe two other teams.
Baltimore,
yeah. But for the majority, it's been the Patriots. I mean, but just in terms of sheer dominance, what Brady has done for the pick he was, you know, and Belichick, just what they've done, you know, in terms of they've had. Back to back in 2003 and 2004. So they won 2001, 2003, 2004, and then 2014, 2016. But like they had a string where they weren't, but they were still, you know, AFC champions 2007, 2011. So they made appearances, you know.
Yeah.
And we've seen, look at how many teams in the NFL don't ever reach the playoffs or anything beyond the first round. Or, you know, championship game or Super Bowl.
There's teams that, yeah, like the Lions still haven't been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean,
the Brady and Belichick are the two most dominant forces in all of football. And like you said, it's been two decades of that. I don't care what team you like. And, you know, I'm doing this podcast with a bunch of homers. I don't care what team you like. That is like, do not pass go, do not collect $200, because you better get that $200 to Brady and Belichick. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah. Every year you expect them to, you know.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not a bad, in some of those seasons, Brady was out for the year, you know. And they still probably had a better chance of making
it. He missed 2 years in a row. He missed the first four games of the season.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
and he just like, yeah.
Right.
We'll make
came back. We're 3-1, and I'm Tom Brady. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, he just, the amount of dominance he puts up, and it's not like Tom Brady has some magical set of skills. You know, I think you could have the argument that there's better football players skill-wise at that position and have been since Brady's come into the league. You know, there's guys that can do more amazing things, but the coaching for what Brady has as a set of skills is, I mean, they, especially as Brady's gotten older and utilizing the short game, mm-hmm. getting those receivers that love those crossing routes, get, you know, Welker, Amendola, you know, like Julian Edelman, get those guys, even their running backs have always been Shane Vereen, guys that can go out little short dumps, let them go out into the flats.
But he can still, I mean.
Oh, yeah, he can still on a dime. Yeah,
don't sleep on him. Like,
no.
Tom Brady will still bust your ass.
But the coaching, like, dig route, the scheme that's there, it helps put that in place. Yeah. You know, you little do these little dip and dives, and it's going to open up the deep ball. And it helps when you get guys like Randy Moss on the team. You can just throw up, and the guy jumps. Or you have a giant man of a tight end running straight down the field. And
lots all of giant men playing tight end for his, you know, over the years.
Yeah.
He's had some great tight ends.
But the coaching scheme has just, and, you know, as a Packer fan, it's been the where you scream at the top of your lungs with having Rodgers on the field, or, you know, like Mike McCarthy, I feel like, dropping the ball sometimes with the talent you have. Belichick's never done that with Brady. Nope. He's always right put him in a position
Mike
to win.
Mike McCarthy needs to do what's right, and that's get Ty Montgomery. If anybody else that isn't Ty Montgomery touches the ball, you've lost.
I think the show needs
should
Ty
be
Montgomery
kicking right now.
Can we have Ty Montgomery on the show?
Ty Montgomery needs to get busy this
we
year.
We take a shot every time Ty Montgomery gets there. I think what it is he had to watch Ty Montgomery gash the Bears for like 250 all-purpose yards, and it stayed with him.
When was that, last year?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
Yeah,
Christmas
I was too busy
time.
Watching the Chicago Cubs win. I might have missed Ty Montgomery's coming out party.
So
my apologies.
When Brady got drafted in the seventh round, right?
Yep, 2000.
Yeah.
Did he get to sit? When did Bledsoe get hurt? Was it late in the regular season?
2001. Yeah, it was late. I think mid to late 2001 that season.
Did Brady, was that his first year in the NFL the year Bledsoe got hurt?
Second.
He had the benefit of being able to just
sit and watch.
Be the backup, sit
and Bledsoe
and watch.
Was a good quarterback.
Excellent
quarterback.
Yeah,
he's a pro full quarterback.
Yeah.
So he had basically a year and a half backup.
Mm-hmm.
Holding the clipboard, rocking the headset. So the Patriots' defense, I think Brady benefited from the fact that there was no pressure on him.
And but how many people have crumbled under that?
Sure.
You know, like, we've seen a lot of backup quarterbacks step into the role of quarterback, and then they curl up into the fetal position and want to, you know.
I don't disagree with you there, but here's the thing. The difference is the Patriots had a dominant defense at the time. So here, what I'm imagining the conversation went like when Drew got hurt. The things we know about Tom Brady now in hindsight, of course he was incredibly prepared, incredibly confident, a great teammate, all these things, the list goes on. But I think it was probably pretty clear to him that Belichick and his OC, was that Fat Charlie Weiss at the time?
I don't think he had him then. No.
Anyhow, I think the expectations for Tom as the backup coming in were not that, like, we're going to need you to go on and become arguably the best quarterback in NFL history. You know what I'm saying? That's not what they were telling Tom Brady.
Right.
They probably just told him to, like, go in.
Or maybe they did.
Manage the game. And so I think, would he have been what he is now on any other team? Hard to say. But I think he benefited from being involved in a really good situation with a dominant defense and not being expected to do too much.
Sure.
No. You mean like that first year?
That first year.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, because you know how it is. Joe brought up a great point. If he would have gone in and thrown, you know, 15 interceptions in four games, he would have never started in the NFL again. That's just the way the NFL works. So if you go in with the expectation, either from the team or on yourself, that you need to be a hero, it can go off the rails real quick.
But I think that's why Tyler picked them, because we're talking about dynamic duo. So the other half of the dynamic duo is established there by putting Tom Brady in position to succeed.
Bingo.
If maybe, we don't even know that, right? Maybe he just put Tom Brady on the field because Tom Brady was second on the depth chart,
right,
and Tom Brady started doing his thing after that. That could might have happened too.
That could.
So the thing is, I've stopped saying that the other team is going to win when they're playing the Patriots in the playoffs. Just or if you stopped doing that, more than likely you're not going to be wrong. So you just don't bet against those two as long as they're still around.
Right.
You know, that's just is what it is.
Yeah. And we could look at it as, you know, sports duos, players, sports duos, coach, player kind of a thing. But
no, screw that, man. That's perfect. You said duo. I love it.
All right. So finally, lastly today on the nerd side of things, pop culture, you know, Wonder Woman has recently come out. And for those of us who have seen the DC movies, Marvel's kind of kicked its butt so far, setting up its universe, doing their thing. And DC's been a little, you know, Man of Steel was okay. Then they tried Batman vs. Superman. It just, at least for us who are fans of everything, it just didn't work. And then we sort of got to see Suicide Squad before the power went out. And that was just not good, too. So, you know, expectations weren't high for this, you know. Wonder Woman, this hasn't been touched really since...
Expectations for us,
you know. Well, yeah, for us. But, I mean, a lot of other people, I think, in D.C., you know, expecting this movie. You know, and Linda Carter was the original Wonder Woman. It hasn't really been touched since. They tried to do a live-action TV show, and that got canned. You know, they did the pilot, didn't get picked up. So it's kind of, you know... But, so it's been out. It's been super successful. One of the highest, you know, grossing superhero movies. But, you know, it's female-led. That it's the first female-led superhero movie. You know, there was a lot of talk of, like, Black Widow doing it. Joss Whedon, never happened. So we have our first female-led superhero movie directed by a female as well, Patty Jenkins.
Well, it's not our first female superhero.
No, she's done... She did
Thor. Don't forget that awesome Elektra movie.
Okay, yeah. Well, okay. Okay, not the first female-led, but... Of the new universes.
Yeah.
So, my thing was, you know, it's done really well in theaters and worldwide. It's gotten really good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. You know, like, I think higher than 94%. There's not a lot of movies that get that, especially in the superhero realm. I did see it. So the first female-led superhero movie, you know, how do you see this paving the way now that it had success? How do you see this paving the way for not only future movies, just in general? It doesn't have to be a genre. But then, you know, what does this mean for, you know, female-led movies and female directors as well? So, Joe, we're going to start off with you on this one.
Well, we've already seen it. It's starting to happen. It's upon us, and it's a beautiful thing. Like, we have Black Panthers coming, predominantly black casts. We have, you know, Wonder Woman, obviously, you know, as we're talking about, these things are happening. There was a reboot on the Marvel side of comics not too long ago, giving more characters of color, female characters taking different roles. All of these things are happening, and it's beautiful. Comics are supposed to loosely look like our lives. The people in the comics are supposed to look like people you see walking down the street. That's the point. It's Bruce Wayne. He's a dude. He's a rich dude. He's a rich white dude. And then that's it, right? This whole thing with how finally, you know, we're getting the big screen version of this movie, and it has come out good, is great for young ladies. Mm-hmm. You know, Pete, you have two daughters, you know.
At least.
That you know of.
You know, it's good for little girls to have somebody that they can go and see in theater. I think, you know, but that's good for everybody. Because I think the Marvel and DC universe, the comic book universe in movies,
is the biggest grossing thing that happens. You next Star Wars. If you can line up, you know, comics and make a good movie, people are going to see it, you're going to make money, right? So that needs to start to reflect what happens when that happens. Is it needs to start to reflect the people that you see on a day-to-day basis, because it needs to connect with someone somehow that puts you in a movie, that puts people into that movie. So this is an important time. I think it's only natural that this movie is as big as it is. I'm glad it's good. More, you know, for me, I'm really glad that it's good, because so much of DC has been bad, and that's lame. Because if you look at how the universe has been set up over the years, the biggest female in any comic is Wonder Woman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, that should be the most powerful one. That should be the one that does, well, that sans Jean Grey. But, you know, like, that's, it's a big deal, mm-hmm. right? To have that out and to have it be as big as it is has been great. DC has failed on the other two biggies. You know, you look at, okay, your top four superheroes should probably be Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, and then, like, for some reason, it ended up being Wolverine, right? What DC has failed to do is to give us Superman and Batman that everybody wants,
right?
You know, in this new set of movies. We've gotten them pick and choose in the past, and I've come around to my man as the Man of Steel, and come around to it. I still want to see a great movie. I've seen two good movies. It's good. It's right. Fine. Thank you.
But it's a good thing.
But yeah. But this, I'm excited to see. I have not seen it yet. I'm going to see it this week. But I'm really excited about it. I think it's great for the genre. And I think it's great for DC to get this one right. Of all the stuff you're going to get right, out of all the hype that's been around these movies, you're going to wait till now to get it right. So let's fix everything else and keep it going. Because, you know.
Reset.
Right.
Pete?
Well, obviously it's a good thing. But this is more of an observation on society in general. I think it sucks that we have to have this conversation in the first place. The fact that, oh, for a woman, she did a great job at directing. Oh, for a woman, she did a great job. And that goes for race, gender, whatever. I mean,
and she was pregnant while filming.
Well, yeah. Why do we...
That's
awesome.
That's badass.
It's awesome.
Women are better than us.
Yeah.
In case you haven't noticed.
But the fact that, like Get Out. Like, oh, for a black director, that was a great movie. You know, I mean, why can't we just say that...
It was a great movie.
It was a great movie.
Well, the reason being is because we need what I think most of what's happening these days is we're pointing out the fact that this is a good movie that a woman directed. Hey, it's a movie. A woman directed it. It's good. You should see it. Hey, a woman. Women. Direct.
Good.
Star. Good. See it. Like, that is what we're doing. And we need to do that because we got to point it out. It's good for us to point out because people don't know.
Right.
Right? So, you know, if Scorsese's name is going to be all over something and Michael Bay is going to blow stuff up 5 hours and make me go watch it, you know, then I want to know who's directing movies. Right. I want to know who's...
Should get the recognition.
Right. That so we're pointing it out. And it's good. It's actually, I think, a better thing for us to be pointing out that Get Out was a black director, a lot of great new actors onto the scene out of that movie too, and it was in the horror genre. That's pretty much the thing. Like, you know, that doesn't happen very often. And in fact, it was a spectacular movie. Yes, let's point it out. Let's point it out. Am's a comedic director.
And I'm not saying not to point it out. I'm just saying that it sucks that we have to.
No, it doesn't. Right now, I think we need it more so than ever.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying, now where we are as a society now, we do need to point it out. Absolutely.
But you're saying it shouldn't.
It sucks that we should need to point it out.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Brandon, what do you have to add? You're prepared. You got sheets.
I'm going deeper.
Dude, you got
like
a novel.
It's like a
over
book
there,
here that Brandon's holding.
So, I recalled.
When I was a young boy,
I recalled. what I brought with me was an article on women in ancient warfare.
Ooh.
So, comic books, in a sense, are equivalent to, like, our mythology of modern day, right?
Sure.
Would you say
yeah.
there's, like, a link there? Like, so, like, ancient Greek mythology.
Like, the tales of...
Yeah. Stories that help us understand and make sense of the world that we live in.
Right.
And help us, like, aspire to things. And like,
through history, the comics have reflected, you know, real-world events and, you know,
mm-hmm.
World
exactly.
War II and all that, yeah.
Yeah. Stories that give us, like, the best and worst of what's possible, right?
Sure.
In a way. So, anyhow, female deities have been present in most early cultures. And often they were portrayed as warriors. So the change, because now modern warfare is considered a matter for men
mm-hmm.
in today's day and age. But it wasn't always that way. And, like, when did the change happen? I thought it was interesting that this article suggested it was around the time of the adoption of agriculture as the typical sustenance.
Really?
Interesting.
They argued that that enabled protracted warfare with large
sure.
armies.
Okay.
But back when combat was maybe smaller tribes, if you will, women not only were allowed to fight, it wasn't even a matter of allowing them to fight. It was like, I'm going to fight because
I think children were the same way. Like, you had no
You
option.
Have a mama bear
yeah.
protecting
right.
the family. There's
yeah, so our 2017, our society and the way our society thinks about these black and white roles that men and women have, and like, oh, a female superhero. Like, I get why it's a talking point, because it's so unique mm-hmm. for our society. Women aren't thought of as being strong and powerful, right? But I think if you look back through the course of human history, it wasn't always that way. Especially like BC and the millennia prior.
The icons were a lot different.
100%
yeah.
agreed.
Yeah.
The problem is, you just said we have to look back before Jesus.
Right.
If you need to do anything to get a perspective with before Jesus, we have an issue. If it happened before Jesus, we're slow. Here we are very slow.
Yeah.
All right,
man.
And
we haven't built
so...
a good pyramid in a while.
So I mean, that's the big problem. Like, we can't. You're absolutely right. There was a change. I think what became society and modern, when culture started being used as a word, is when these roles started to make themselves
like
prevalent.
Like, the family, the father would go make money, mom stays at home with kids. I mean, over time, that starts to slowly have it.
Right.
And even war.
You start to assign labels to the sexes.
Yeah. But before that, it's like, look, we need to eat. We got food. They want to come take it. Like, everybody grab this sword. Let's
right.
go get it. Like, it don't matter. Everybody grab sword. Like, that's how it was,
yeah.
right? So I get that. Like, that makes sense. But that sucks. That, much to Peter's point, that we're talking about, like, before Jesus. Like, and we need to change that BC to just before Jesus.
Right. The Christians won. When time is measured based upon the arrival.
Yeah, that's a thing, man. That's crazy that we have to look at it like that. But yeah, there was a time where men didn't suck. It's basically what,
yeah,
yeah. There's
that's what
a
I'm
time
saying.
That
yeah.
men, not man,
but men,
right.
yeah.
men
yeah.
specifically didn't suck. We've sucked for a long time. I guess we were better before Jesus. Jesus came to try to make us better. We've chosen not to be, and we've sucked ever since. And that should be a chapter in the Bible,
yeah.
right there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's hope it's a good change for the future.
Oh,
yeah.
wait. I do have a
part two.
So it's a joke.
Okay.
It's a maiden joke on the podcast. I'll keep it PG-13, all right? All right, so Superman.
Maiden joke.
Superman, you know, stretching his legs, if you will, flying through the sky faster than a speeding bullet, getting some exercise in, looks down on the beach, sees Wonder Woman.
I've seen this joke. Or heard this joke.
Laying on the beach, spread eagle. Thanks. Well, I'm pretty fast. Probably get down there and do my thing and be gone before she even realizes what happened. So, Superman swoops down, takes care of business, flies away faster than a speeding bullet. Wonder Woman goes, "Oh my God, what was that?" And the Invisible Man goes, "I don't know, but my ass is killing me."
Randall Renz, ladies and gentlemen.
This is why men suck. Because we found that to be amusing. That's why.
Oh, all right, so...
Now you gotta tell a joke every podcast.
Yeah, no, now, yeah, we might have to make that a thing. So, good discussions today. We hit all three pretty quickly and efficiently. So, as we did in the first episode, I'm gonna finish with a would you rather. Throw it out there to the masses. Sometimes it's hard because I want to try to keep it clean, and some of the really funny ones I just... But, all right, so, would you rather... swim 300 meters through shit or dead bodies?
Oh, man.
300 meters is not short.
What's the consistency or texture of the shit? That's a swim. Like, you're going to sweat. You're going to break a sweat.
Let's say more solid than liquid. Let's say the normalcy
of by saying swim, are we assuming there's like enough water?
Let's not debate the consistency of this. Just
well, no, like
one or the other.
I'm imagining like that would be more like called crawling over dead bodies, right?
Well, okay. Let's say with dead bodies, there's water.
They're suspended in a liquid. Yes, okay, yeah. Okay.
It's not like gelatin that you're like...
300 meters, eh?
I'm gonna go with the boo boo. I'm gonna go with the boo boo because, I don't want to be around dead bodies. I'm not a dead body, so I'm gonna go with the boo boo. Plus, I do think the zombie apocalypse is going to happen if I'm swimming through dead bodies.
They're gonna try to eat you.
No, if the zombie apocalypse happens at that very moment, or that's a response
to
the zombie apocalypse,
all
of a sudden now I'm in the worst possible place that I could ever be in. So if it's like, Joe, we got two options. We can go through here, we can go through here. I'm like, what's over here? Like, dead bodies. I'm like, what's over here? Like, boo-boo. I'm gonna go with the boo-boo. Like, it's just that easy.
You can shower.
Like, yeah,
you can shower.
You know, like,
I gotta think
that.
There's less diseases in the feces.
Probably.
Less diseases?
That's an interesting...
Less, yeah, well, yeah, if it depends on how long the bodies have been dead. Because
people are nasty.
Yeah.
Like, you don't...
You're going to be breathing...
Gross.
You're going to intake a lot.
Right.
Of both.
But...
In either situation.
Right.
Your odds...
I would say there's less disease in...
In the dead bodies.
No.
No.
You don't think so?
What if
that's
it's
a good point.
Bubonic plague?
Look, you're probably not going to live very long after either one. Your life expectancy has definitely gone down. Let's just chalk that up
to being
a wash.
I would think in the poo, you could maybe just do backstroke. I don't know. Try to keep face above. Yeah, I'm not saying you have to front stroke
or you're
not doing butterflies through it or diving in, but there are very different. But what do you got, Brandon? He's debating.
His gear's returning.
I didn't think
gotta get an answer. I
were
say
you side stroke. Keep the head out of there.
How are you gonna swim through these?
I guess
front crawl through all this.
I think there's a lot of I try to overanalyze things. Like, how long have they been dead? Like, how decomposed? Like,
let's say a variety. You got a little bit of everything.
Some that have been that are like decomposing some, rapidly.
You got some skeletons, and you got some fresh off the chopping block.
Oh man, my initial thought was give me the dead bodies because at least the water is going to be cleaner.
Is it?
Well, we don't know how long they've been in there,
or what they died from, or what. I'm not saying they're all soft, you know, like
right. You're
like, these aren't like
you're rolling the dice here both ways.
I know. But the good point is, yeah, there are strokes that will allow you to keep your head out of the water, in which case, as long as you don't have like a lot of like cuts or open wounds on your skin, I think the dookie might not be that bad of an option.
It's probably the best option.
All right, I think we're in agreement there. But yeah, it was a good show. Thanks for joining
us.
You
didn't answer, did you say?
Oh, yeah, I did. I said, I got to go. You got to go with number two.
You got to go with number two.
Yeah, you got a better survival chance, and I'll take my chance of keeping my head above that line of no return. Because yeah, you're not holding your breath at any point. I mean, you are, but not for that reason. But, yeah,
well, Tim Robbins did it in Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, I mean,
it's true. Tim Robbins can do it.
Tim Robbins can do it.
We can do it, but I don't want to.
That's not true. Tim Robbins is great, man.
No, it was good second episode, guys. All right. Thanks for everybody joining us again. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Later.
Later.
Right. Ty Montgomery.